Chumash, there is a din. Losa nachash shivlosa onenu. We're not allowed to be superstitious. At the time of Kabbalah Satorah, the world was full of a lot of superstition. And the Jewish people were the first ones who were rejecting all of these superstitious practices. Because the Baruch Hu told us, Losa nachashu shivlosa onenu. Over the course of the years, the Jews have developed so many minhagim that at the time that they developed them, a lot of them had a wonderful reason and everything made sense. And now a lot of them just seem to be superstitious. The old reasons don't apply. So it looks today as if the Jews are very superstitious, but maybe we should discontinue observing all of those minhagim that don't make any sense. Minhagim come and go. So there's a siman in Shulchan Aruch, siman kuf ayin tes, the second chelik here. A day about loisa nachshu v'loisa onenu. Ona means a zman. Ona salimudim, ona. So there's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch. What day of the week should the yeshiva begin? So some have the practice that you don't begin the yeshiva not on a Monday and not on a Wednesday. So the Shulchan Aruch says it's permissible to have that practice. You're not mechuyev to, but noagu. It's permissible to have the practice not to start learning on a Monday or a Wednesday. And it's not a violation of Los Nachshav Los Nachshav. They give a reason why. Okay, the Taz quotes the reason for this practice. The insistence not to start. The Vilna Goyen and the Bir Agro always gives Mar Mekaymus. I mentioned last night the Vilna Goyen was a descendant of the one who wrote the Bir Agoylo. Bir Agoylo always gives you the Mar Mekaymus of every simon. Tells you where everything comes from. And the Be'er Agro gives you, assumes that you're reading the Be'er Agoylo, and he's adding on, he's enhancing the Mar Mekaymus of the Be'er Agoylo. So he has Mar Mekaymus on every phrase in the Sif. The Be'er Agoylo gives you the Mar Mekaymus on the whole Sif generally, who's the Rishon that says it. The Vilna Gaon tells you the Mar Mekaymus on every part. Once in a long while, the Vilna Gaon will disagree. Usually he doesn't. Even when he does disagree, usually he doesn't write it in Be'er Agro. They write another swarm that he disagrees. Be'er Agro is only intended to give Mar Mekaymus. Once in a while, when the Be'er Agro, instead of writing what the source is, he writes Ayin. Sometimes he writes Ayin Shach. Ayin Shach means look in the Shach doesn't like it. Or over here, on this Sif, that it says that there's a meaning, and it's not a violation of Los Nachshav Los Anenu. Let's say the meaning is, when you're going to get married, so the meaning is that you get married the first half of the month when the moon is getting bigger and bigger to represent the idea that the love for each other should grow, as opposed to getting married the end of the month. So why I got married the end of the month? So far the marriage is not bad. Over 55 years of marriage, marriage is successful so far. We'll see. Next 55 years, we'll see. So it doesn't mean that the people who get married at the beginning of the month will have a happier marriage than those who get married at the end of the month. No, it's just a simon. So some Rishonim said you're not allowed to be makbet on that. When you're picking a wedding date, you're not allowed to look to see whether it's the beginning of the month or the end of the month. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, it's permissible to be makbet. It's not a violation of Losa Onenim. Not a violation. So just like that's not a violation, because the Gemara says on Be'el Rosh Hashanah, we eat different kinds of fruits and vegetables as a siman bracha. Siman bracha does mean that we're going to dip the apple in honey, we're going to dip the challah in honey. It means we're going to have a sweeter year than the other people are not going to dip in honey. No, not necessarily. We offer a tefillah. So this enhances the tefillah. That's what the Nesivus writes in his Sefer Nachlas Yaakov. Nesivus was a rabbi in the community and he held drushes, he gave sermons. So he put out a collection of his sermons on the Parshiyos HaShavua. He has some Hespeh in there also. So he writes, he thinks that just like the Ramban HaChumash says that there are two types of Nevuah. There's Nevuah with the Poel Dimyon. A lot of times the Nevi'im were told to deliver a message to the Tzibur. And sometimes they were told he should sleep on his left side, then in the middle of the night he should sleep on his right side. And he should eat a burnt piece of bread that's dirty. And different Nevi'im are told take two pieces of wood, hold them together. That's a Nevuah with a Poel Dimyon, to act something out. So the Ramban in his commentary on Chumash writes that the Nevuah with a Poel Dimyon, but the Nevi'im was told to act something out, is a stronger level of Nevuah than the Nevuah without a Poel Dimyon. So So the Nesivus writes in his Sefer, he thinks that that's what these simonim are all about. The Ikra of the simonim on Leil Rosh Hashanah is that you say the Yirotzon Shetachadosh Aleinu Shana Tov Amasukah, or Sheyichlutz Aneinu, or Sheyirbo Zuchu Yosenu, whatever the tefillah is. And if you act it out by dipping the apple in honey and so on and so forth, so then that elevates the level of the tefillah. It's considered a stronger tefillah. So, just like the Gemara says, there's no violation of nichush if you have the simonim. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch paskens over here. There's no violation of nichush if you're insistent that the yeshiva should not begin on a Monday or a Wednesday. But it doesn't mean that the yeshiva has to begin on a Tuesday. For many, many years, I went to this yeshiva since my high school years, from the beginning of high school. She always began on a Tuesday, because always began the day after Labor Day. So Labor Day is always on a Monday. So yeshiva always began on a Tuesday. Tuesday is Yom Shuch Bobo Kitov. That in Bereshis, on Monday, it doesn't say Kitov. The Gemara gives all explanation why. So on Tuesday, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, he finished what he started on Monday, and then he created something on Tuesday that says Kitov twice. So to start the yeshiva, that's a recommendation. Start the yeshiva on Tuesday is a recommendation. Yom Shuch Bobo says Simitov. So here the Vilna Goyim, when it says to Shulchan Aruch that this is not a violation, if you mock but the yeshiva should not begin on a Wednesday, Vilna Goyim disagrees and he says, Ayin tikun izayar, he tells you where to look. I didn't look, but what it means is that he's disagreeing. Whenever he says, Ayin, look over here, look over there, it means that he doesn't like this mocker. Thinks that there's what to disagree. Anyway, the Rama says you should start the yeshiva on Rosh Chodesh. He doesn't say which Rosh Chodesh. So you should start Rosh Chodesh, start from the beginning. Okay, last night I thought mistakenly, originally they told me that I should speak, give a shiur from 9:15 to 10. Then they asked me to say some Divrei Musar from 10 to 10:15. But then when they introduced me, they told me that they asked Rabbi Cohen to prepare something. So I didn't deliver the talk that I was going to say. But part of the talk that I was going to say is relevant now, so I'll mention it now. Rav Kook learned in Volozhin, and the last 39 years in Volozhin, the Rosh Yeshiva was the Netziv. He was not a direct descendant of Rav Chaim Volozhin, the one who founded the Yeshiva. Volozhin Yeshiva was founded in 1802, something like that, Rav Chaim Volozhin. And it lasted for 90 years, and then they had the Russian government pressured them to close the yeshiva. So they had to close the yeshiva. So the last 39 years, the Netziv was the Rosh Yeshiva. The last couple of years, he took as co-Rosh Yeshiva, he took Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who happened to be married to his granddaughter. Rabbi Foyle Volozhin, Rabbi Foyle Shapiro, was the son-in-law of the Netziv, and Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was the son-in-law of Rabbi Foyle. So the last years of Volozhin, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was co-Rosh Yeshiva with the Netziv. People were upset when the Netziv appointed Rav Chaim as a Rosh Yeshiva. People said that it was just plain nepotism, that he wasn't Roy Lekach, that he didn't deserve to be Rosh Yeshiva, didn't say such a good shiur. So they called in the members of the board to decide. Members of the board were not wealthy, but members of the board were alumni who had smicha, who were practicing rabbis in big communities in Europe. So they came to the yeshiva and they said he should get up and give a shiur. Rav Chaim should give a shiur, and they're going to decide whether he's worthy of saying a shiur or not. So Rav Soloveitchik used to tell over the story. Rav Chaim got up and he prepared a whole shiur. He started delivering the shiur. And then in the middle of the shiur, he realized he was coming to explain a difficult line in the Rambam. Middle of the shiur, he realized that there was a pirush HaMishnayos LaRambam that none of the listeners were probably familiar with, but he realized that it contradicted everything that he had to say. So he apologized and he said he made a mistake. The hope shot that he thought he was going to say is wrong, and he sat down in the middle. So this was going to be the shiur that's going to make or break his being a Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin, but he was intellectually honest. He realized that it was wrong, that it wasn't right to give his interpretation of the Rambam, because the Rambam himself wrote not so. So the members of the board decided that if he's so honest that he's prepared to sit down in the middle of the shiur, even though none of them would have known this Pirush HaMishnayos, then he's worthy of being the Rosh Yeshiva. Anyway, he with the Netziv, with the Rosh Yeshiva, the last years in Valoshim. So Rav Kook learned at the Yeshiva. He used to cover approximately a blot Gemara every day in the public shiur. And the Netziv used to give the shiur, I think the Talmidim wrote up, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, the Netziv gave the shiur, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik gave the shiur, totally different style of the shiur. The Netziv gave the old style shiur, he was a fantastic baki. He knew everything. And any given posik in Tanakh, anywhere in Tanakh, he can shake out 25 Bar Mekomis of Midrashim, and Gemaras, Agadotas, and Yerushalmis, and Bavlis, and everything. Comment on any given posik in Tanakh, he'll show you how the posik was referring to Liman HaTorah. Whatever the posik is talking about, he'll show you Midrashim, that say it goes on Liman HaTorah, and it's an additional level of interpretation. He was known a fantastic book. And he had the old style of learning. And Rav Chaim had a totally new, different style of learning. But Hezber, Rav Chaim's style has been accepted all over the world, and everybody learns that style. So Rav Kook was a Talmud in Yeshiva. He was much closer to the Netziv. He used to talk and learning with Rav Chaim. Rav Chaim, before the Shir, he used to talk and learning with Bochum. They used to ask him kashas on the Blach Gemara, and he would work out the inyanim together. So Rav Kook was involved a little bit in talking, learning with Rav Chaim, but he basically did not attend Rav Chaim Shiur. And they say the reason why was because when he was younger, when he was a teenager, he had learned by Abruva Ledenaburger. Every city in Europe had more than one name. The Jews called it one name, and the Goyim called it by a different name. So the city that we call Dvinsk, but the Osamech was the rabbi, and the Ragatshava was the rabbi also in Dvinsk. So the Goyim used to call it Denneburg. Maybe under the Germans it was called Denneburg. Under the Poles it was called Dvinsk, whatever. They had different names. So there was a period of time when the Jews also called it Denneburg instead of calling it Dvinsk. So one of the Rabbanim that they had was Rab Reuven Levine. So he was a big guy. So Rav Kook had picked up, learned by him for a while. And his policy was he can't say a Svara unless it's either Mefurish in the Gemara or the Rishonim or Kamat Mefurish. So Rav Kook felt that Rav Chaim Svaras were even making up new Svaras that were not really so Muchach in the Gemara. Maybe if he would have paid a little more attention, maybe he would have realized that he was saying all the Svaras that are Beferish in the Gemara. So last night, those of you who heard the shiur that I gave, I developed an idea that there are two types of shutvim, and I showed from three different makaros that this is the case. I didn't make it up on my own. I had Rashi by Maisa Behemah points out, Rashi learns pshat in the Mishnah in the end of Choris, and Dafnu and Vav on the base, I think it was, that shutvim are not chayev in Maisa Behemah, but if it's tfusas habayis, if the father had a big farm of 20,000 herd, 20,000 animals, and then the father dies and the Yorshim get it Beirusha, so that's not called, that's called Tfusas Habayis. It's called Zman, they didn't make a Chalukah. That's considered as if all of the Yorshim own the whole estate together. It's not considered like Yorshim. It's a different kind of Shutvah. And then I pointed out there's a Tosis on the first daf in Bav Metzia, where Tosis also has that there's a difference between Shutvim Shenishtatfu Midas Atzmon as opposed to Yorshim. When Yorshim get Yerusha and they didn't make the Chalukah yet, Tfusas Habayis is called, the whole Yerusha belongs to all of the Yorshim. You don't say, I own half and you own half. You say, we both own all. We both own everything. That's why if there's a Suffolk, if I'm a Vaday on half, and the suffix where I get the whole Yerusha, so I'm called the Muchzik on the other half. I'm not a Vadeh on the other half, I'm only a Vadeh on one half. I'm called the Muchzik on all because Yerusha before Chalukah is called Tfusas Habayis, where all of the Yerushim own the world. It's a different type of ownership. And then the third point that I brought out was that Rav Dovah Soloveitchik interpreted that's why there was a difference between the Korbanos that Aaron and Abanov brought. The halacha required all five Aaron and his four sons had to bring a whole set of karbanas every day for 7 days, Shiva Simei HaMiluim. And unlike the usual din that that when you have a whole group of shutvim bring together a shlamim or an oila, echad meinef ayidei kulam, only one does tenufa. Here it says that they all did tenufa. Why they all do tenufa? You can't do tenufa b'zeh hazeh, because the pasuk says you can only have one tenufa. But if you have one tenufa, so the Gemara says, if you have a regular shutvis, so my hands will be a chatzitza between your hands and the chaz of a shoik. And over here, apparently, that's what Rav will explain. Over here it says in the Chumash that they all did tenufa. So he suggests that they all did tenufa b'masachas, and he thought that smicha also. They all did the smicha b'masachas, because it's one big bailus. Since the halacha requires all five Aaron and his four sons had to bring the korban and the shutvis, it's considered one bailus. It's not considered separate bailus. So I didn't invent this svara. This svara is based on Rav Elbel had that the Chumash says that it's in Tosefta points this out in the Chumash. Tosefta points it out that unlike every other korban hashutvin, here they all five had to participate in the tenufa, and he explained why it's considered one big bailam. It's not considered each one is a separate bailam, and your hands would constitute a chatzitza between my hands and the korban. Anyway, Rav Chaim had a lot of very original ideas, but all of his original ideas were based on Gemaras. I think maybe Rav Kook misjudged it. That's what he told his Talmidim. He didn't appreciate Rav Chaim's Chidushim years later when he had in Yeshiva, Merkel Sarav. So he told the Talmidim that he didn't appreciate Rav Chaim's Derech Halima so much because he thought it was in violation of the principle that he had picked up from Rav Ruvel at Denneburger, that when you say a svara, it has to be either mefurish in the Gemara or kamat mefurish in the Gemara. Rav Chaim's usually are kamat mefurish in the Gemara. Sometimes they are mefurish in the Gemara. Taisus, the first Taisus in the Mesichta, discusses a funny topic, not too significant a topic. What's the Seder HaMishnayos? Why does Baba Basra follow Baba Metziah? So Taisus quotes that there is a machlokes in the Gemara whether kulam nizik and chodem mesichtehi or not. What's the issue? Kulam nizik and chodem mesichtehi. So those who learn Kalim, Maseches Kalim has 30 prokim. So the first 10 prokim are called Baba Kama. Second 10 prokim are called Baba Metziah. The third unit of 10 prokim are called Baba Basra. So many assume, most assume that kulan nizik nechadim mesichta only goes on the 30 prokim of Baba Kama, Baba Metziah, Baba Basra, parallel to the 30 prokim in Kalim. That's what the Mahashoah points out. Mahashoah thinks that the Mahashoah here has a comment on that. Mahashoah thinks kulan nizik nechadim mesichta goes on everything in nizik, Baba Kama, Baba Metziah, Basra, Sanhedrin, Makkah, Shavuos, Adias, Pirkei Avos, everything in Seder Nezik and Nezchadim Mesichta. And many other Achrenim disagree with the Mahashoah. They think that he's wrong. They think Kul Nezik and Nezchadim Mesichta only goes on the 30 Prokim, just the three Bavas, parallel to the three Bavas in Maseches Kelim. The commentaries in the beginning of Mishnayos Shabbos, Maseches Shabbos has 24 Prokim. So the commentaries, if you look in the big Mishnayos in the Melech HaShlomnei, in the beginning, on the first page, he says, Rabbi Yehuda Amnasi could have really made Maseches Shabbos into 30 prokim. There's a lot more in the Tosefta. He could have incorporated more into the Mishnayos. Could have made it. Baba Kama, Baba Metziah, Baba Basra. Could have made it 30 prokim, like in Nezikin and like in Maseches Kelim. And the reason why he made it 24, because we always refer to Shabbos as a Kala, Boyichala, Boyichala. Who's the chosen? If Shabbos is the Kala, who's the chosen? There's a funny medrash that the Shabbos came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to complain. All the other days of the week have a marriage partner. Sunday has Monday, Tuesday has Wednesday, and Thursday has Friday. And Shabbos is left without a partner, so who's going to be the ben zug of the Shabbos? The Rav Shlom said, B'nai Sol will be the ben zug. You have to know pshat and the medrash, what does it mean? So the Shabbos is the Kala and the Jewish people are the Chosn. Some kind of a marriage between the Jewish people and the Kala and Shabbos. So the Gemara points out that in Tanakh, in Sefer Yecheskel, the days of the Tanakh, it was the common practice was that a Kala would wear 24 pieces of jewelry. don't know exactly where there's room for 24 pieces of jewelry. So 10 fingers. You can wear 10 rings. You wear 2 rings on every finger. Earrings, nose rings. I don't know, chokers, whatever. They used to wear 24 pieces of jewelry. So because Shabbos is a kala, and the kala usually has 24 pieces of jewelry, the days of the Tanakh, so that's what the Malach HaShleimah said. Malach HaShleimah has halacha. Sometimes he has Kabbalah also in his commentaries. So he suggests that maybe that's where Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi picked to make Masech Shabbos 24 prokim. These are the 24 pieces of jewelry that the kala Shabbos should have. I remember once there was a boy from the yeshiva who got married. So he said, they're just like the kala needs 24 pieces of jewelry, so the chassan should also have 24 pieces of jewelry. The 24 svarim in tarach, chav dalek kisvei hakodesh. In fact, a lot of Europeans, I remember from years ago, Europeans who spoke Yiddish, they didn't refer to the Tanakh like we do, as the Tanakh, Torah, Nevi, Luxum. They used to refer to it as the Esrim V'Arba, the 24 Esrim V'Arba. So he made a siyum on the 24 Svarim of Tanakh for his wedding. Some people today make a siyum on the Masechta, short Masechta, long Masechta, Kiddushin, Ksubas, whatever. So remember that boy, he's now a successful doctor. He has a family, a nice family. So he made a siyum, l'kovet his chasana, 24 Sifri of Tanakh. I was just at a wedding last week, the chasan tried to make a siyum on all of Tanakh, but he didn't have enough time because he works already. Made a siyum, over 20 svarim of Tanakh. That was beautiful. That was beautiful. Anyway, Tosfos says, Tosfos quotes the Gemara, that Ein Seder La Mishnah. What does it mean, Ein Seder La Mishnah? That Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi didn't necessarily, when he gave the shiur to the Talmidim, he didn't necessarily do first the brachas, then pay, then I don't even know what the Seder is there, in Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. He didn't necessarily follow the Seder. There is a Seder in the Mishnayos. When he taught the Nesichtas, his students, he didn't necessarily teach them in the order that they appeared in the Mishnayos. Each Mishnayos, he taught in order. He taught first Perek Aleph, Perek Beis, Perek Gimel. What's the relevance, whether he taught all the Masechtos in the correct order? So Tosfos says it's relevant for the klal. If you have machlokes v'achakach stam, if the Mishnah records a machlokes, then in a later parak in the same Masechta, you have a stam Mishnah, then you say halachik is stam Mishnah. If you have a stam achakach machlokes, then the klal does not, then you don't say halachik is stam Mishnah. So that's because Rebbe taught the Masechta in order from the beginning of the Masechta to the end, but Ein Seder La Mishnah. Let's say if it's a machlokes in one Masechta and it's not Mishnah in a different Masechta, you don't really know that Rebbe taught the second Masechta after teaching the first. Could be taught the first one after the second. Whenever he said a machlokes and later he would say a stam, then he intended that halachik is stam Mishnah. But he didn't necessarily teach it in the order that the Masechtas appear in the Mishnayos. Within one Masechta, you say Yesh Seder La Mishnah, but from one Masechta to the other, you don't say. So that's the Shaila that Tosfos says. The Gemara discusses whether Kula Nezik and Chodim Masechta or not. Is it one Masechta or is it two Masechtas? An Afkamina for that Klal of Halachik is Stam Mishnah. Mishnah speaks about 4 different types of walls that they can possibly build to separate between their 2 backyards. So one is Gvil, Gozes, Kfis, and Levein. The Mishnah has 4. There are many other types of material. Today, we wouldn't use any of these. We would use whatever is common in our Medina. So that's when the Mishnah says, Hakol Kaminik Hamdina. It all depends, whatever the Minik Hamdina is in every generation. But then the Mishnah gives you the klolim, how thick the wall has to be. If it's gvil, it should be so thick. The Tosfos is bothered with the kasha. Why does the Mishnah bother to tell you how thick the wall has to be if it's gvil, gozes, kris, and levenin? Once it says Hakol Kaminig Abdina, so whatever the Minig Abdina is, that's what you follow. So that's what Tosis says. Let's say there'll be a Minig Abdina to make a wall thicker, to make a wall from Gozes that's thicker than this, to make a wall from Kvis and Levanin that's thicker than the wall that's spoken of in the Mishnayos. So the Mishnah means to say that that's a Minig Shtus. This is called an Aminic Hedyot. But the Rabbi Natam and the Tshuva, if you ever saw the Rabbi Natam, wrote a Sefer, the Sefer Yosha, the Rabbi Natam. So the first half of the Sefer, when it's all printed together, the first half of the Sefer is the comments that the Rabbi Natam made on the different Masechtos. Then the second half is a collection of Tshuvas, letters that the Rabbi Natam sent to Talmidim of his and to other Rabbonim. And a lot of those letters he has discussions of Halacha as well. So there's a famous tshuva by the Rabbi Natam. If you look at the Mordechai on Gittin, it's on Gittin and Daf Peivov. When the Mishnah in Gittin gives you what's the text of the get, he learned Gittin from Daf Beis. It takes you till Daf Peivov. That's the end of the Masech. The Gittin ends on Daf Tzadik Aleph or so. So Peivov is almost the end of the Masech. So the Masech doesn't give you the text of the get till you get to Peivov. Gufa shel get. So on that Mishnah, if you look on the Mordechai, on that Mishnah, it's on the bottom of the page in the Mordechai, they have the Shilti Giborim, has Hoysophis, and the Shilti Giborim quotes a famous tshuva by the Rabbi Natam. In the history books, they quote this tshuva. Rabbi Natam says that sometimes you follow a minig, the letters of the word minig, men, nun, hey, gimel, also spell out Gehenim, gimel, hey, nun, men. Rabbi Natam, sometimes you follow the minig, you go straight to Gehenim. There has to be a minig that's reasonable. It has to be a minig of people seeking. In Shulchan Aruch it says that we have a minig on Purim that we clap home and we make a lot of noise. So some people have tinnitus, they make noise, you're going to miss half of the Kriyas HaMegillah. People are making noise. So it says the Baal Kori has to be careful that whenever the people make so much noise and they missed, they didn't hear the word, the name of Haman, so they have to lay it over again. The Baal Kori should lay it over again, or he should lay quickly, and he shouldn't keep on laying when the people are making noise. Why not just do away with the minig? So the Rama says, no, it's an old minig, you shouldn't do away. So the minig is a chelak, it's a fulfillment of the mitzvah, mechiras hamolek. We just read the end of last week's seder, the end of Kisetze is about mechiras hamolek. It's included in mechiras hamolek is to make noise when they clap home, to make noise when they read the Megillah. So there the Magen Avraham talks about the significance of observing minhagim, even if they seem a little strange. And the Rama has tshuvas about that. So that's why they say minig, in order that it should be banned, it has to be a minig vasikin, it has the approval of the Rabbanim. It's a minig that was originated by tzaddikim, by Tamid HaChacham, it has the approval of the Rabbanim. Sometimes the Balabatim start a minig. Every minig has a good reason, but not all the minhagim are considered minhagi vasikin. Sometimes we consider a minig shtus, and the Rabbanim in every generation have to determine whether they think, they have to reinvestigate all the various minhagim to determine whether they think the minig still is meaningful or not. Maybe years ago the minig had a good reason, and now the reason doesn't apply anymore. By a takona, the Rabbanim, you have all the takonas were made for a certain reason. So the Gemara has a klal in the beginning of Beit, so Dovashim min yitzach min yanach ala hatiroi. If the Bezin made a takana de Rabbanan for a certain reason, and now you live in a generation where that reason doesn't apply anymore, so then we say that takana de Rabbanan is still binding, even though the reason for the whole takana doesn't apply in this generation. But by Minhagim, the Paskim say it doesn't apply. Chaim Eisen has the last Jew in Achiezer. He talks about that. Achiezer, there are three volumes of the Tshuvas of Rabbi Chaim Eisen. So the third volume was printed in the middle of the Second World War. And he writes in the introduction to the volume, maybe people will have tinnitus. Why am I spending money, hard-earned money, on printing Tshuvas? We can save lives. The $3,000 that he used to print the Sefer, you could use the money to bribe some Nazis to free some of the Jews, to buy their freedom, that they shouldn't be killed. So maybe it's not right that I'm using money to print a Sefer. So he justifies his printing of the Sefer. He thinks that learning Torah and Paskening Shilas is what keeps the Jewish people alive throughout all the generations. And he thinks that it's a good idea. He's not going to take them. Most of the money that they had was used for to save the lives of the Jewish people, to get as many Jewish people to safety as possible. But he says he doesn't think that it's he's in violation of Pikuach Nefashos by using some of the money for publishing the tshuva. So the very last tshuva that's included in the third volume is on this topic, that the Dovish of Bimin Yisof Merachal HaTirai only applies to Takanas Rabban, doesn't apply to Minhagim. If you live in a generation where the whole reason for the Minhag doesn't apply, so the whole Minhag doesn't apply. Many Jews from Hungary or from Germany had a Minhag that on Pesach they wouldn't eat chicken. They would only eat flesh from behemoths. Why? Because they used to feed the chickens grain. They used to feed grain to the chickens, and it was soaking in water. And then the belly of the chicken would be full of this grain, which would turn into chametz. A lot of times it would turn to chametz before they would eat it. And then if you shech the chicken soon afterwards and you cook the whole chicken together, we don't eat the stomach of the chicken. But in Europe, they used to cook the whole chicken with the stomach, and it was not uncommon that they would cook some chicken, and then on Pesach they would find achita mechumetzes. They would find a kernel of grain that was soaking and cooking in hot water for so long that it turned into chametz. So the din is that chametz be Pesach is be mashehu. In behemoths, you don't cook the whole behemoth together. You get a slice of meat and you cook. You don't cook the behemoth with the belly, which may be full of chametz. The stomach is separate. Each part of the meat you eat, but the chicken, normally you would cook the whole chicken together with the stomach. So that's why they developed a minig in certain parts of Europe. In Germany and Hungary, they wouldn't eat chicken on Pesach, only eat flesh, because this chashash didn't exist. But after the war, all the German rabbonim said that the minig no longer applies, because it's much too expensive. Now nobody feeds the chickens grain anymore. They feed them corn on the cob. They feed them maize. Corn on the cob, the worst it can be is kidneys. That's not going to be b'mashu. Kidneys, we don't eat kidneys at Pesach, but it's bottled b'roiv. You don't even eat shishin, says in Shulchan Aruch. So since the whole reason for the minig doesn't apply, so the whole minig doesn't apply. So the rabbanim, every generation, have to investigate all the menhagim, whether they think that it's still a meaningful minig, does it still make sense or not. Take, for example, they have in the biographies of the Chazon Ish and of the Stipala. Stipala was a brother-in-law of the Chazon Ish. He was in the Chazon Ish's family. There were, I think, 14 children or something like that. Chazon Ish himself didn't have any children, but he had 13, 14 siblings, a big family. So all of the brothers were Tamir Chachamim, not all as great as the Chazon Ish. And all of the sisters married Rabbanim. They all married Tamir Chachamim. They were all Tamir Chachamim. The father was a Rav. Father was a Talmid Chacham. So they have there that the Chazon Ish's practice would be whenever he was never in the practicing rabbinate. So when he would request of the rabbi to sell the chametz on his behalf, the minig usually is, the Rambam records the minig, that when you appoint someone else as a shliach to give a get for you, to give the get to your wife, or you appoint the shliach to sell the chametz for you, so the minig always was, the Rambam in Hilchus Mechira quotes this, the minig always was that the person makes a kinyan with the rabbi. So let's say I want to give you a matana. I want to give you my house as a matana. I want to sell my house. So you give me your handkerchief. A sura doesn't necessarily have to be a handkerchief. You can give me a ballpoint pen. Give me a yarmulke. Give me a gartel. Give me any kli shalem. You give me a kli. So by my accepting the kli, I'm makna to you the house. I'm makna to you the metaltel and whatever. So that's when you're selling something. What about when I'm giving... What if I'm giving the right to act as my shaliach? I'm the man of the person as my shaliach. I'm giving over, so to speak, the power of attorney. That he can act as my shaliach. The rabbi can act as my shaliach to sell the chametz on my behalf to the nochri. So the Rambam writes, the minig always was that when the husband wants to send the get to the shaliach, that the shaliach should go. His wife lives on the other side of the world, so he wants to send the shaliach to give a get to his wife. So the meaning always was that the shliach would give a handkerchief to the husband, and by the husband accepting the handkerchief, he would be makne, he would give over the right of attorney, the power of attorney to the shliach. So the Rambam says that there's no need for kinyan suda, and it doesn't accomplish anything. So the Chazon Ish said, if there's no need for the kinyan suda, it doesn't accomplish anything, then it's a minig shtus. So then he didn't do it. So the Chazon Ish never made the kinyan. Whenever he appointed the rabbi as a shliach to sell a chometz for his on his behalf, he wouldn't go through with that kinyan suda, and the stipler did the same. He didn't do it. Rav Soloveitchik, on the other hand, was very insistent that you got to observe the minute, because first the Rambam says there's no need for a kinyan suda when you appoint a shliach. You don't need a kinyan, and nothing is accomplished by having a kinyan. So it sounds like it's a minik shtus. Then the Rambam explains why you do. Why is the minik that you do have a kinyan? Rav Soloveitchik said, no, the Rambam defends the minik, and he explains why. So Rav Soloveitchik always insisted you have to do the kinyan suda. And even he said that every rabbi knows that on Erev Pesach in the morning, as he's about to leave his home and go to sell a chametz to the goy, one of the balabatim will always call up the last minute and say he forgot to come in person to ask the rabbi to sell a chametz on his behalf. He wants to appoint him as a shlech over the telephone. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said, so strictly speaking, he can appoint a shlech over the telephone also. He doesn't have to sign anything. He doesn't have to make the kinyan. Rabbi Soloveitchik gave two ways how to fulfill the minig of making a kinyan, even though it's over the telephone. And it's impossible to do the kinyan. He thought that it's not a minig shtus. Every minig, the rabbanim in every generation have to investigate all the minhagim. Do you think it's a minig shtus? So it's not a minig shtus. Minig shtus you're not supposed to follow. So that's what the Rabbi Natam said. The Rabbi Natam, that if you're going to make a wall thicker than what it says in the Mishnah, that's a minig hedyot. It means a minig shtus, and you don't do that. Hedyot. Hedyot is a Greek word for idiot. Idiot means a commoner, as opposed to intellectual. Hedyot is a plain. Like every kind go along kind head. Kind hedyot means a plain kind. So hedyot means a plain commoner, not so smart. Minig hedyot, minig shtus. You don't always follow the minig. Sometimes that's what the Rabbeinu Tam and the Tshuva writes. That's quoted there in the Mordechai on Daf Pei Bav and Gittin. That sometimes the minig is Osias Gehenim. Sometimes you follow the minig, you go straight to Gehenim. Yeah. So here on the first Daf, the Gemara has two Lushainas, how to interpret the Mishnah. So the first Lushan starts right away, Savruha, right in the Gemara. Savruha, my mechitza guda. Then the Lishna Achrina starts on the top line on Gimel Amid Aleph. Lishna Achrina Amila, another version has it, Savruha. Now what does the word Savruha mean? So Savruha usually is a technical term that has the connotation that the Bnei HaYeshiva thought the Pshat was this, and then they realized that it's incorrect. So here, Taisa's comments, that here it says Savruha, what they say Savruha, Avagav de Lebesov Koi, even though at the end that's Taka de Pshat in the Mishnah, so Savruha is a technical term that usually means they thought incorrectly, but then they corrected it. So Tosh says, every so often in the Gemara, the term Savruha appears, and it's not incorrect. What does Tosh have on the last line in that little Tosh of Savruha? Voida Marie, the Perkama din and Durham daf Yidal Kamanal, if he can Savruha, Avagav de Lebesov Koi. Umasakoch, the Maskana is like that. Savruha is usually a technical term. You must have heard of the Balamor, Rabbeinu Zrachi Halevi. Do they have a Sefer Amor here? Oh, I was wondering why this Gemara is not as fat as the others. It has no riff. Okay. So I don't need it. So the Balamor lived in Lunel, in southern France, in Provence. There was a section in southern France called Provence. So he lived in the city Lunel. Lunel means the moon. So he called the name of his sefer Hamor HaKotten, because he lived in Lunel. But then Rabbi Berman read this morning, he read the last Mishnah, the last line in the Mishnah is, oh, it does have a riff. Oh, no, doesn't it? So he read the last at the last line in the Mishnayos. Above her Basra. On Daf Kufayin Hey on the base. Omer Rabbi Shmuel. Harotza Sheyach Gem, if a person wants to sharpen his mind, Yasek B'din and Mominus, שאין לו חיים מקצה בתורה, גודל יויסה מהם. והם כמיין הנווה, רוצה שיעסיק דיני ממנס, ישמה של שמן בן אנס. So the Balamor writes, in order to understand the Zikin, you can't learn the Zikin to the light of the moon, you need the sunlight. So the commentary of the Balamor and the Zikin is called Hamor HaGodol. And everything till the Zikin is called Hamor HaKotin, because he lived in Lunel. And the Noshim and the Zikin, he quotes this Mishnah that talks about the Zikin, but he changes the name of his Chibur to Hamor HaGodol and Noshim and the Zikin. That's why in the yeshivas, in the Lithuanian yeshivas in Europe, the emphasis is placed on Noshim and Ezekiel. Not so much in Valoshim. Valoshim, they learned straight. They started from Brochus and they went straight. Brochus, Shabbos, Erev, and they went straight giving Shurim. You look in the Sforim Meray Mesora, the Shurim of the Netziv, that he gave him Valoshim. He has a date. On the, you can tell how fast they went in the Shurim because he gives you the dates when he started the Mesichta, when he started the next Mesichta. A month later, he knocked off every day. The governor approximately a blot gemara, and Shabbos they chazit. So 6 days a week, they learned approximately six blot gemara, and Shabbos they chazit the six blot. Then the next week, they learned another six blot. They went straight. This was in Slabodka. They adopted that policy. And other yeshivas adopted. They're going to concentrate on Noshim and Ezekin because of that Balamor is coming, based on this Mishnah at the end over here. This yeshiva was really a combination of two yeshivas, Eitz Chaim and Yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchok Ochanan. There were two yeshivas on the Lower East Side. Yeshivas Eitz Chaim was named after Balozhin. That was the name of the Balozhin yeshiva, was Eitz Chaim. So here the tradition was they didn't always concentrate on Noshim and Ezekin. When I was in high school, we learned all kinds of different mesichtas. It wasn't always in Slabodka. They only had the seven mesichtas. But we come about mitzvah, but basurik suvus and yivam is getting kedusha. The shomer only on the seven mesichtas. And here in America, Rabbi Aaron Kotler founded Lakewood Yeshiva. He learned in Slabodka. Bianca Kamenetsky taught in Torah Vedas for so many years. He learned in Slabodka. Rabbi Rudiman was a big bokeh and everything, but he had learned also Slabodka. So they were all used to that practice. That's what they introduced. That the morning shiurim are always on Noshim and Ezekin, and the afternoon and at night say that they do bikiyas. And here in the yeshiva, we never had that. Here they covered everything. In fact, Rabbi Gifter used to tell that he learned in high school here, that his uncle was Dean Zar. His uncle was on the Hanhola of the yeshiva. So his uncle convinced him that he should go learn in Europe, in Telz. So when he went to Telz, he asked him, what mesichtas did you learn already? So he said, with great pride, he said that he learned Erechin and Tmura and Krisis and a whole bunch. So they asked him, did you learn anything normal? So he said, what do you mean normal? Well, what's the difference? He didn't realize that in Telz they placed all the emphasis on Noshim and Ezekin. That's the irregular mesichtas. He learned a whole bunch of other mesichtas. Then after learning there a couple of years, then he began to understand what they're talking about, what's considered normal by them. They were makbir on Noshim and Ezekiel. So Rabbi Mizrahi Halevi has running commentary on the Rif. The Rif abridged the Gemara. The Rif will quote Iboy Lahu, and then he'll give you the maskana. The Gemara has a whole shakla vitaria, toshma. Here you have hezek riyah, shmei hezek lav, shmei hezek. The Gemara gives one raya, and then matcha, another raya, then matcha, another. They quote. So the Rif will abridge everything. He'll leave out the whole shakla vitaria, gives you the shaila, and gives you the psak. So the Balamor has tainus that by abridging the Gemara, you're going to be missing a lot of halachas that you learn on the way. A lot of times in the Gemara, in asking Akasha was making a certain assumption, and when they gave the answer, they don't reject that assumption. That assumption remains lemaskonim. And the Gemara has, so you really shouldn't abridge the Gemara. You should never abridge any Gemara because you're missing a lot. Okay, that's one of the hasokas that the Balamor has. Balamor has running, it's not really a commentary on the Rif, he has hasokas on the Rif. He writes that he's only 19 in the Hagdama of the Balamor. He writes only 19 years old, and he's writing Hasogas on the Rif. The Rif is like the Mishnah Brura today. The Rif was the major Sefer Psak at the time that Balamor is writing his attacks. So he says it's a little chutzpahdik on his part, or a big chutzpah, that he's only 19 and he's picking on the Rif, but it's all in learning, so he thinks that it's fair. So then at the end of Chulin, after the Rif is all finished, the Rif goes to Chulin, doesn't have Ankochin. So at the end of Chulin, Balamor wrote what he calls his Sefer Hatzova. He has a shtick that just like there were Yud Gimel Midah Shatoran and Reshes Behem, how to read in between the lines in Torah Shebichsav, so too in learning Gemara, there are Yud Gimel Midah Shatoran and Reshes Behem, there are certain technical terms that have a certain connotation. So one of them is Savrua. That Savrua is a technical term that means that Bnei HaYeshiva originally thought like this, and then they realized that it's not so. So he said that's what it usually means, but every so often there's an exception to the rule. So he talks about this, what Tosfos says over here. Is it always true that Savrua means that it's a mistake and the end it's not so? That's one of the. Then he has other things that the Gemara gives. The Gemara says a din, and the Gemara gives you a whole bunch of conditions when a din applies, that you need all the conditions, that you just need some of the conditions. It's a shtick that the Balamor wrote. He collected all of the. He boils it down to 13. Midishatar, 13 technical terms that usually mean one thing and sometimes there are exceptions to the rule. That's the whole Sefer HaTzovah is all about that. We don't have it, for some strange reason, we don't have it printed at the end of the Balamor and Chulin. It's printed in the Sefer Tmim Deim. Tmim Deim is the collection of truths by the Ravid. And the Ravid used to learn Mecharusa with the Balamor. The Ravid used to learn Mecharusa and they wrote Hasogas on each other's Svarim. So the Balamor has comments on the Rif, and the Ravid wrote a Sefer that we don't have a better name for it. We call it, they say, we call it Sefer Kosov Sham, because every paragraph begins with the word Kosov Sham. My good friend, Rabbi Mizrahi Halevi, wrote XYZ, and then the Ravid attacks him. So half the time he says, it was my shtickle Torah, and he stole it from me, gone for me, iti. And half the time he says that it's wrong. He always disagrees with the Balamor. Either he stole it from me and it's mine, or it's no good. It's not mine, then it's no good. He disagrees. And the Balamor wrote, and the Ravid wrote the Sefer Balei HaNefesh, Sefer on Taras HaMishpocha, that all the poskim quote l'halocha. It's quoted a lot of times in Yeridei HaLocha L'maisa. So the Rabbi Mizrahi Halevi wrote Hasogas on the Balei HaNefesh that was written by the Rabbi. He doesn't have such short lushiness. The Ravid has the sharp lishainis when he's attacking the Balamor, his Chavrusa, and when he's attacking the Rambam. He always has very sharp lishainis. But the Balamor writes when he disagrees with the Ravid, Balanavish, he writes with respect. He disagrees. Different style. Anyway, this is an issue. This Savruha. The first Lashon starts off Savruha, and the second Lashon starts off Savruha. So it cannot be that they're both all a Havamina. Either way, Paskin, the Lishna Kama, Lishna Basra. The Lishna Kama is working with the assumption that Hezekri Alavshme Hezek. Lishna Basra holds that Hezekri Ishme Hezek. So it's either you Paskin like the first, or you Paskin like the second. So Ben Tam thinks that the reason why it says Savrua is in the beginning is because we really Paskin Hezekri Ishme Hezek. And you can be koi for the next Onebi, even if he doesn't have you can be koi for him to build a wall. So why does it say Savrua at the beginning of the second Lashon on the top line on Gimel Amun Aleph? Lishna Achrina Amri Lo, Savrua Mai Mechitza Plukta, the Mecha Chaluka. Savrua means also, Ahav Amina. So that's, the Lishna Kama is a mistake and Ahav Amina, Lishna Basra is a mistake. So what is the correct pshat? It's either A or B. It's either the Lishna Kama, Lishna Basra. So the Rabbi Natam says, because the first Lashon is not correct, so the fish has a loshen eino iker, marchas pilchas el kamon. So that's why. Vagav de nokat b'hai lishnan savrua, and the lishnan kamon, they said savrua, because the Gemara is going to back out from that, they're going to pass on aloch ezekriya ishmei ezek. So nokat nami b'lishna achrite, lishna basra, lishna achrina amilo savrua, it's not also savrua. But really, it should only be savrua and the lishna kamon. Because we're not going to accept that. We're going to pass on halacha that the chen posik rabbi in the tam that kaloshen sheni that has agreed ishmei has it. That's what we spoke about last night. What does it mean Hezik Grish Mahezik means you're an Oda Mamazik. Pashta says it's not a din of Oda Mamazik. Pashta says it's a din of people who live, people are next door neighbors to each other, have in a certain sense, have a status of Shutfin. Even though they're not Shutfin in anything, whenever people share a certain needs together, like I pointed out in Chosh Mishpat, it says that people who live in the city have a right to be kai for each other, to build, to put up, to spend money to make an Erev, and to make a Beis HaKnesses, and to make a Mikveh, and a lot of things like that. It's a din of Shutfin. It's a din of Shutfin. So here also, privacy is an important topic. Everyone is entitled to privacy. That's the shaila. Is privacy that important that you have a right to be kai for the neighbor, to spend money to build a fence, to remove the hezek riyah? You should have more privacy in your backyard. So we paskin, yes, the privacy is. You don't have to build a wall till the sky. You have to build a dalet amos tall. We'll solve the whole problem. Dalet amos is probably a little above my head. Okay, a little above 6 feet. So even if a guy's 6 feet tall, he won't be able to see over the neighbor's fence. Dalet amos is enough to take off the hezek riyah. But what were the two lashonos in the Gemara? So the first lashon was Ashut Mishirosa Lasas Mechitza. How do you translate the word Mechitza? The word Mechitza means, like we call a Mechitza in the Shul. Mechitza means a wall, a guda. A Mechitza means a chaluka. Ashut Mishirosa Lasas Chaluka Bechotzer. What's the din? Let's say you have, I know a fellow who was in, he had a nursing home and he had a shutif. The shutta put up an awful lot of money. He did all the work. But then after years, he was doing all the work. The shutta was just sitting and taking, raking in all the profits. Shutta wasn't lifting a finger. So how long, l'yolam void? He has a right to be a shutta and to take the profits, because initially he put out all the money, or most of the money. So the din, the Gemara has a din. When you have a shutta, it's self-understood, they're not stuck for life. There's a sugya, good or yogud. Where's the sugya? That's on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. There's a din of good or yogud. If a people is din of the good or yogud, here, the fourth line from the top. What is good? The good, you ever hear of good asik mechitz, the good aches mechitz, the good means mshoch. Good is an Aramaic word, gimel vav dalet. Good means limshok, to pull something in one direction. So if you have a mechitza, let's say you have a sukkah that doesn't reach the ground, the walls of the sukkah don't reach the ground. So we say good, I visualize as if I'm stretching the walls, good aches mechitza. Aches means to go down, asik means to go up. So I visualize, let's say this chach is over here, and the wall of the sukkah only goes so high. But the wall of the sukkah is supposed to touch the schach, supposed to be connected with the schach. So the halacha says, good, asik mechitza. If you have a mechitza that's 10 tefachim tall, already has a din mechitza, then you visualize it as if it stretches up and it bumps into the schach on top. Or let's say you have a mechitza that's suspended above the ground. So I said, but the mechitza, the floor is also considered a mechitza. The schach is a mechitza and the floor is a mechitza. Mechitza means a mokam is a three-dimensional location. A mokam is not two-dimensional. A mokam is three-dimensional. So let's say a sukkah has to be Zion al Zion tvachim, begova yud tvachim. So you have to have six defanas. You have to have six mechitzas, a roof and a floor, and the four walls. And then how many other four walls really have to be there? Shtaim kelchasim, shlishis hafil tefach. Two and a half walls is enough. But the roof is considered mechitza, and the floor is considered mechitza. Masech sukkah. You have like that. So good, that's good aches and good asik. Good means meshoch. You visualize as if the mechitza. You can't have a mechitza that's only one tefach tall, and you're going to say good asik mechitza. Consider it as if it's 10 tefachim tall. No, it's not a mechitza. You have to have a doifin. You have to have for Rishus Harab, for Rishus Hayochid, for Shabbos, or for Sukkah, it has to be 10 tefachim tall. Once it's 10 tefachim tall, it has a din of a mechitza, then the halacha says, good asik mechitza. I have the right to visualize if it stretches all the way up, as if it's connected with the schach on top. Or even the area above the Rishus HaYochid, Avir Rishus HaYochid, is kirushus ayachid dami, because he said good ache mechitzta. You visualize if it goes up. So here there's a lashon when people have a shutfis, either party has a right to break up the shutfis. They're not mechuyev to be stuck forever with each other. What if one of them is not happy with the shutfis, like over here? The person that I knew, he still comes to my weekly shiur. He comes to the shiur. He was doing all the work in the nursing home. The other guy wasn't doing anything. So he wanted to divide the business. So he said, there's a din, good or yogurt. I can say, either you buy me out or I want to buy you out. I want to break up the shutfis. So sometimes, let's say, we have 10 nursing homes. And let's say all 10 are equal in value. So I can say, I don't want to be b'shutfis with you 10. I want to make a haluka. I want to take 5 nursing homes. And you should take 5 nursing homes. So it's a dovah sheyesh bo kedei haluka, so you can make a haluka. If they have 1 nursing home, how can you divide 1 nursing home? Dovah sheyesh bo kedei haluka. So then you can force sort of a haluka. You say, I offer you the first crack. I consider the nursing home is worth $20 million. Either you buy me out, give me $10 million, we're 50-50, or I'll buy you out, I'll give you $10 million. So I can, the Gemara even says, I can inflate the value of, say the nursing home is not worth $20 million. It's worth much less. I can inflate the value in order that I should be able to, I know that you can't afford to pay me $10 million to buy out my half, but I have a lot of money, let's say, so I want to buy you out. So I can inflate the value. I can say, I consider it as if the 1 nursing home we have is worth $20 million, and I give you the first crack. I give you the right to buy me out, or I want to buy you out. Okay, so that's good or yogurt. You have a right. You have a right to buy out. So that's what the Gemara has a discussion of. How do you translate the word Ashut Mishirasu Lasos Mechitza? Mechitza means a separation. As the pasuk reads, "Vatihi mechitz ha'eda." Here, that's the second line from the top on Gimel and Aleph. Mechitz ha'eda means the half that the tzibur got, and they divided the loot after the Melchemes Midyan. So they gave half to the soldiers and the army, and half to the tzibur. So does the word mechitza mean chalukas hashutvim, or does the word mechitza mean a war? So if it means hashutim shotzel ases mechitza, it means 2 neighbors, and they decided that they want to build a wall to separate. Means that they wouldn't decide they want to build a wall. Neither can force the other one to build a wall, because as agree, Lav Shmei has it. That's not a legitimate thing that I have the right to force the neighbor to put up money for that. But if you say Ashutim Shvasa Lasas Mechitz means to make a separation, means that they're Shutim together. So why do you have to have the other fellow in agreement? Why can't I force him to divide? So that's what the Gemara quotes in Mishnah from later. Sometimes it's a dovah she'ein bo kedei chaluka. Sometimes you have a house. Let's say they have a field. And if they're going to divide the farm in half, each one is going to be so tiny it doesn't pay. It's ridiculous. So you have a dovah she'ein bo kedei chaluka. You can insist that you want to divide. You can insist good or yogurt. I can say, I assess it as being worth $1 million. I give you the right either to buy me out or I'll buy you out. You always, the shutfim always have a right to terminate the shutfis. If it's a dovah sheyesh bo kedei chaluka, we own the whole North Dakota. So I can say, I want to divide. You'll take half and I'll take half. Okay, so we'll figure out how are we going to draw the lines. So you'll get half from North Dakota, I'll get half from North Dakota. You'll get half, I'll get half. That's, we can force chalukah like that, or we can force a good or yogurt. So the Gemara suggests maybe Ashut Mishrasa Lasa Mechitza. If it's a dovah she'ein bo kedei chalukah, it's such a small chotzeh, such a small farm, it doesn't really pay to make a chalukah. But nonetheless, if they agree to it, then the Gemara is going to ask, even if they agreed, but why can't they back out? Just because they agreed orally? Doesn't mean anything, says Gemara. Nehedra Behu, the Gemara asked on Gimelan, why can't they back out? Gemara said they made Kinyonim. They made Kinyonim, then you can't back out. Okay. So according to that pshat, Ashut Mishiras Alasas Mechitza, they own a farm, Shein Bo Kedei Chaluka. So you can't force Chaluka like that. You can force, you want to terminate the Shutfis by good or yogurt, But they both agreed, and they made it legally binding. They both agreed they're going to divide the field in half. You know, each one's going to get a very small farm. In a certain sense, it's going to be a little ridiculous, the farm is so small. So once they made the chalukah, then you say, Hezek v'Yishmael Hezek, then they can force each other to build a wall to separate. So that was the second version, the Elishna Basra. And the Elishna Kama was, no, shutum shotza lasas machitza, that they're next-door neighbors. And you can't force the other person to build a wall. They can live without the wall. But if they agree that they're made kinyon and they're mishad themselves to put up money to build a wall, then it's legally binding. So those were the two lishanis in the Gemara. When they say hezek v'yishmei hezek, Allah shmei hezek. So the Mishnah says, lefichoch, since in this case when they made it legally binding that they mechiv to pay for a wall, and either because they had to make kinyonim to be mishab themselves to build a wall, or they make it legally binding that they're going to separate the farm, they're going to cut the farm in half, I'm going to take half, you're going to take half, then they can force each other to build a wall, and the wall takes up space, so half of the space Reuben has to give, half of the space Shimon has to give. So, therefore, some of the bricks, when the whole kaisel falls down, some of the bricks are going to crack and they're going to be worthless, going to throw them in the garbage. They'll have to recycle them, they'll have to make them over again. But other the bricks didn't smash. So the bricks that are still of value, they divided 50-50. And the mokum, let's say the mokum, the kaisel took up four, five, six tvochim. It's a thick kaisel. So the mokum, you have to divide the mokum shoshneim, 50-50. And the bricks that didn't get ruined when the kaisel fell down, they divided 50-50. What do you mean, lefichach? So Tosfos says, pirish. According to the first Loshen of the Gemara, the hezek v'yishmei hezek, lav shmei hezek. So it means, Tosfos writes on the second line, kigon, second line in Tosfos, lefichach. If yadu alanu adayim v'zorchem shehiknu zel azeh. If there are people who remember that they made a legally binding agreement, they made kinyonim, that they're going to pay for the wall. The wall probably is standing for the last 30 years. The wall doesn't fall down the day after you make it. Probably lasting for 30 years, then it fell down. So you have to have people who remember that over 30 years ago, these two neighbors made kinyonim, or maybe they have a document. They made to keep it on the files for over 30 years. So if they have a raya, they have edim, or they have a document that indicates that they agreed to make the wall, then we assume that everything is 50-50. The mokum is 50-50, and the bricks are 50-50. And according to the other pshat, the Lishna Achrin and the Gemara, that's how we pass on the Lishna Basra. Usually the Rambam has a tradition from the Gemara, Hilchasik Lishna Basra. Now the Gemara has one pshat, and then the Gemara says, Yiboy Yiseim, and if you want, you can say differently. So usually the Rambam will pass on like the Yiboy Yiseim. Usually we pass on like the Lishna Basra. Not all the Balei HaTosfos accepted that klal, but that's from the days of the Gaonim. The Gemara has like that. When they wrote down the Gemara, they wrote it in such a way, they wrote it in such a way that whenever there are two suggestions, so they put the Ikar suggestion, the two suggestions that disagree with each other, La Locha, so they wrote, they always wrote it, the Lishna Basra is the one that's more correct, La Locha Lamaisa. Iboy same here. It's Lishna Achrina Amrilon. The other version has it. That's what the Rabbeinu Tam says. We pass on like the Lishna Basra over here. The Rambam always passed it. Here the Rabbeinu Tam said because it says Savrua. But even the Rambam says, even if it wouldn't have said Savrua, whenever you have a Lishna Kam and Lishna Basra, so we always assume the Aloha is like the Lishna Basra. So Tosfos here is bothered with Akasha. This is lefichach. Because the Mishnah presents it, because the din required, either because the two of them agreed, or even if they don't agree, because the din requires either in all cases or in some cases, that they're both obligated to chip in to give half of the mokum and to give half of the money. So therefore, if the wall falls down, we assume that we're going to divide the bricks that were not ruined 50-50, and we're going to divide the mokum 50-50. So Tosfos says, and what if you can't prove in the first place? No one alive remembers that over 30 years ago they made kinyanim to agree. And even if there wouldn't have been such a din, why don't you just say it should be Maman Amutta Besafik Chokim, not Lefichok, since the din required either in this case or in all cases that both of the neighbors have to give half of the mokum and both of the neighbors have to put up half the money, there wouldn't be any din. But you have Maman Amutta Besafik. What's the din? Maman Amutta Besafik Chokim or Ein Chokim? So Tosis quotes, that happens to be a machlokes Sumchis and the Chachamim. Sumchis holds Maman Amutta Besafik Chokim and the Chachamim disagree. So we don't. Most of the Rishonim do not paskin like Sumchis. Some Rishonim do. Most of the Rishonim do not. We don't paskin like Sumchis. But Tosis says in this case everyone would agree, even the Chachamim of Sumchis would also agree that this would be Maman Amutta Besafik Chokim. Why? So they quote from the Gemara in Bava Metzia. Where is that? In the middle of the Tosis. Where is it again? There is a Gemara in here, Tosfos says. In Perek HaShoel, in the middle of the Tosfos says, Bar Metzia Daf Kuf Amud Aleph. Amachlet Parah B'Chamor. If they had a barter, I need a Chamor and you need a Parah. So I sell Parahs and you sell Chamor. So I make up, I want to buy a chamor from you and you want to buy a parah from me. So it's going to be barter. Not that I'm going to buy and pay cash for that. Not everybody has a checking account. Not everybody has cash. So years ago, a lot of people did barter. Okay? That's a shaila. Is the world a better place because we have a monetary system introduced? Or is it worse? So a lot of sociologists were of the opinion that the institution of cash is an evil of society. That because you can amass a lot of money, so that's why people are so mean to each other. And if there wouldn't be any monetary system, the world would be a better place to live in. The Chazanish held that that's not correct. That's not the Jewish attitude. Chazanish said, there are three areas of halacha where the din insists that you need davke kesef. You don't need shavu kesef, is not acceptable. You need davke kesef. Usually, let's say, when you'll get married, so isha niknas be kesef, our meaning is that we're mekadosh be kesef, but we don't give cash, we give a ring. So shavu kesef is kekesef. I call it arkula. Shavu kesef is kekesef, with three exceptions to the rule. So one of the exceptions is a din d'oraisa, pidyon ma'aseh sheni. Everybody here spent a year in Eretz Yisrael, apparently, or more than a year in Eretz Yisrael. So when you have Maaseh Sheni in Eretz Yisrael, you have to be paid a dafka on kesef. You can't be paid on shavu kesef. What does it mean, kesef? Some people think mistakenly kesef means silver. It doesn't have to be silver. It means cash. It doesn't have to be. If you have a bar of silver, that's called shavu kesef. And if you have copper coins, or you have golden coins, or some other metal, that's called kesef. Kesef means legal tender recognized by the government of that country. If you take your pruta chamura from Eretz Yisrael, you bring it to America, the pruta chamura is considered shavu kesef in America. If the pruta chamura, if your matbea is still in Eretz Yisrael, if it's an Israeli coin and it's still in Eretz Yisrael, then it has the status of kesef. If you have an Israeli coin in America or in England, that's in South Africa, that's considered shavu kesef. It has to be yotze b'oisa medina where it is. It doesn't help if it's yotze medina in Eretz Yisrael. In America, the Pruta Chamura is considered shavu kesef. A friend of mine, lives on Har HaZeisim, exotic fellow. He belongs to the group of practicing Paraduma. They just bought three Paradumas from Texas. They flew them to Eretz Yisrael. They're preparing what's going to be. Preparing in case we'll need a Paraduma. Years ago, they used to carry the newspaper in the New York Times. They used to carry that the Rabbanut bought the Paraduma just in case I'll need it this year. So now the Rabbanut, I don't think, does it anymore. There's a whole group of people, and this acquaintance of mine is from that group. He always looks for the exotic things in life. Anyway, he lives on Har HaZeisim, but he didn't own a farm until now. So he and a whole group of people just bought a shutvus and a farm in Galil in order that they'll be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Trumas and Maisers. It's their farm that their shluchim are going to be mafresh Trumas and Maisers on their behalf, and they'll be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Shemitah. Yeah. That was the minig in Europe, that for many generations, the Gemara has in a few places, no galma kahani tlas sovi. The minig olam is by the Orthodox Jews that we follow the opinions of the three older Tanoim from the earlier generation. Hani tlas sovi, the three Tanoim from the earlier generations, on three different issues. So one of the issues is that you only, that's how Rashi interprets, you only fulfill the mitzvah of Zohar L'chayayim V'hakeva. Whenever you shech the behemoth's kulin, you have to give one of the Chof Dalet Matnas Kulinas, you have to give Zohar L'chayayim V'hakeva to the Kohen. So Rashi interprets in the Gemara that the minig is like the three Tanaim from the earlier generation. One of the Tanaim said, that's how Rashi learns, that this mitzvah only applies in Eretz Yisrael. Doesn't apply in Chutz La'aretz. Tesis and many Rishayim are not happy with Rashi. They say there is no such thing. But that was the minhag for many generations, that they didn't give Zohar L'chayayim V'hakeva on Chutz La'aretz. But it's an inyan to fulfill each one of the mitzvahs at least once in your lifetime. So in Yerideya, and that siman about Zohar L'chayayim V'hakeva, it's in the middle of Chelek Aleph Yerideya. So the crazier place, but Rabbi Yonasan Ebish, is printed, part of it is printed on the side of the page in the big Shulchan Aruch. So they quote, the Jews, the religious Jews who lived in the Chutz La'aretz used to send money to an acquaintance of theirs in Eretz Yisrael and ask him to buy a behema, and I want to be a shutuf in the behema, and they should shech the behema, give the Zohar L'chayayim V'hakeva to the Kohenim. So I'll be a shutuf, at least I will fulfill a mitzvah once in my lifetime of being a partner in the behema that they gave Zohar L'chayayim V'hakeva. So the... the Chazon Ish writes in his sefer that he thinks these sociologists are not correct. They think that money is an evil of society. He says if you can only do pidyon ma'aser sheni dafke on kesef, you can't do on shavu kesef. Has to be v'tzar ta kesef yadecha kesef sheyesh olav tzura. So if the Torah has a mitzvah, when you do pidyon ma'aser sheni, you say a bracha. Shekinoshanim sasasona pidyon ma'aser sheni. It's a mitzvah. So in order to fulfill that mitzvah, you have to use dafke kesef. So he says, how can you say that that's an evil of society? If you can only use that mitzvah, you can only fulfill a mitzvah with kesef. Maybe you can say, but you could have brought the ma'aser sheni to Yerushalayim. You didn't have to be paid it. But then there's another one of the three mitzvahs where we don't allow shavu kesef kekesef is machtzas hashekel. Machtzas hashekel, there's no other way to do machtzas hashekel. So the Gemara says, M'cheres and daf nun aleph, machtzas hashekel has to be dafke kesef, shavu kesef is not acceptable. So that's a question. On Shkolim, we have a Yerushalmi, we don't have any Bavli. So Moshe Feinstein writes that in his Truvas, he wrote that when he was younger, much younger in Europe, he wrote a whole Chibur on the Talmud Yerushalmi, and then it was lost. And part of it he had to leave behind, and part of it was lost when he was traveling from one city to the other in Russia. He lived under the communists for a long time. So he bemoans the fact that he considered that the most important sefer that he wrote, more important than the Igros Moshe, more important than the Dibros Moshe, was his commentary on Yerushalmi. So he writes in his Tshuvas that in his commentary on Yerushalmi, he explained that he thinks that this is a din d'oraisa. You can only fulfill machtzas shekel with kesef. You're not yotze b'shavu kesef. So there's a mitzvah in the Torah that can only be fulfilled by kesef. How can you say that kesef is an evil of society? You see that's the ideal society. There's a one mitzvah in the Torah, you can only fulfill with kesef. So you see, you have to have dafke kesef. Then the pasuk says also that when Yaakov Avinu came back to Eretz Yisrael, saying Vayichan es pnehu er, he stopped off in Shechem, and he was so appreciative to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he was Nitzel from Lavan. He married Rachav Aleya, and he married Bila Vizilpa, and he had all the Yud Beishvatim, he had all the children. So he's so appreciative. So it says, Vayichan es pnehu er. Whenever you have to, whenever you have, owe a debt of gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the way to express your gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to make a tikkun in the world, that people should be able to be nenin. So the pasuk is vayichan as pnehu. Yeah, pasuk pshat is that he miloshen machane. Miloshen machane, that he pitched his tent in the outskirts of this city of Shechem. So the Gemara in Bamei Matlikin understands the vayichan, he added chayin to the city. In what way did he add chayin to the city? So the Gemara in Bamei Matlikin, the Gemara has an Haggadah, the Gemara has three suggestions. One suggestion is they never had a monetary system, and Yaakov Avinu taught them that they should make a monetary system. He introduced the monetary system. So would that make sense? He introduced something that's an evil of society, an evil of mankind. You see, that Yaakov Avinu added chayin to the city by introducing a monetary system. It's a positive thing. The other pshat in the Gemara is that he introduced bote merchatzus and bote merchatz, that the people, public bathhouse, that people years ago didn't bathe so often. They didn't bathe so often, so that's healthy for the people, that they should bathe more often. The Gemara has a third pshat, here, that he introduced shopping malls. Instead of, if you want to buy a horse, you have to go over there. If you want to buy an automobile, you have to go over there. If you want to buy furniture, you have to go a third place. So he made a takana that they should have all the shopping centers should be together. So whenever you want to go shopping, everything will be in the same place. So the Chazon Ish doesn't like this idea from the sociologist that money is the evil. Anyway, so this Gemara talks about barter. I need a chamor and you need a pura. So we make up. I'll give you a chamor if you'll give me a pur. So the Mishnah says there, that's barter, that's chalipin. There are two kinds of chalipin. We usually talk about chalipin by giving a handkerchief, you're going to buy chalipin. That's kenyan suda. Then another chalipin, whether I've been in time, so chalipin shavu b'shavu. If I give you the chamor, you'll give me the pur. So kivish mashal zen is chayaseh b'chalipov. Whoever is kind of first, either I got the chamor, so then the pur is nicknessed to you, or you got the parah, so the chamor is nicked to me. Whoever made a mashiach at first and the other one's animal, so the other animal is nicked to him. So that's chalip and shove b'shove. We usually talk about chalip and of suder. But there's chalip and shove b'shove. So the Mishnah has a funny case. Hamachlet par b'chamor v'yolda. Then the chamorah gives birth to a lot. So the question is, when did the chamorah give birth? Nobody was watching. If the chamorah gave birth before the other fellow was kind of the para, then the vlad belongs to the one who it belonged to originally, and the only thing that goes over to the other person is the chamora herself, not the chamora mu'uberah. She already gave birth before. You have to find out from the people who were there. What time was it when the chamora gave birth? And you have to find out exactly when did he make the Mashiach on the Parah. So which one came first? So if the Chamorah didn't give birth till after the Kinyan on the Parah, then the Chamorah, Me'uberes, belongs to the other person. Unless they said the Farish otherwise. Unless they said, I'm just selling you the Chamorah, not selling you the Uber. But usually, if you don't say one way or the other, you're selling the whole Chamorah with the Uber. So that's Amachlekes, Sumchas, and Achachamin. So Sumchas says, in such a case, you don't know whether the chamora gave birth before the fella made the mashiach on the parah or after. If the chamora gave birth before the kinyan on the parah, then the uber doesn't go over to the other person. If the chamora only gave birth after the kinyan on the parah, then the chamora with the uber, everything goes to the other person. So if you don't know when the vlad was born, so that's a moment on muta b'sofik. So Sumcha says yachloko. The chachamim disagree. They say no. Hamotzi mechavera all of araya. What are they fighting about? So the Gemara explains on Daf Kuf in Bav Metzia. Tosfos tells you what perik is it there in Bav Metzia. Perik HaShoel, Bav Metzia, Daf Kuf Amud Aleph, Gabi Machlet Par B'Chamor. So the Gemara says over there, Tosfos quotes the Loshen after the second parenthesis in Tosfos, where it says Daf Kuf Tezvav and Beis Abayis Valiyah. The Gemara says V'lechse B'Shusa Deman Kaim V'Levi Yidach Hamotz Machaver Olaf Araya. Who has the vlad now in his rishus? Whoever has a cheskas tvisa de hashto, whoever is muhsak now on the vlad, that's the din. Amotzi mechavera all of haraya. So the Gemara says, lo tzricha de kaima ba'agam. No one is muchzik on the vlad. So that's it. That's the only kind of amutz mecharel of harai. Whoever has tvisa cheskas tvisa da hashta. The Gemara says no. The one who used to own the chamora originally owned the chamora with the uber, so he has the cheskas mora kama on the uber. Now the question is, did he lose his ownership on the uber? Did the kinyan on the para take place before the chamora gave birth? So the whole chamora goes to the ownership of the whole chamora with the uber goes to the other party. Or do you say, no, maybe the chamora gave birth before the fellow made the kinyan on the para, and only the chamora goes over, the uber doesn't go over. So the Gemara says that the one who earned the chamora originally has a cheskas marakama on the uber. So cheskas marakama is a famous question, a machlek is between the ktsois and his brother. Where the cheskas marakama is a din of muchzok, we have a din hamotze mechaber all of harai. So whenever there's a suffix moment, so whoever is muchzik keeps the moment. So when this, so muchzik means, I'm holding on to the thing, I'm holding on to the watch. It's in my pocket, so I'm the muchzik on the watch. Muchzik means bishusoy. Like in English, they say that possession is 9/10 of the law. Whoever is the muchzik is going to win. Whenever there's a suffix moment, so the muchzik wins. So, but the Gemara says there are three different kinds of muchzik. So the strongest muchzik is cheskas tvisa dahashta. If you're holding on to the metalpon right now, then that's a muchzik. Then the cheskas marakam is a weaker form of muchzik. We assume, most assume, that was machlokes the tzois and his brother, the kuntros hasvekas. There are a lot of Hungarian Jews who pride themselves that they're descendants from the brother of the tzois, from the kuntros hasvekas. He also wrote a sefer on choshen mishpat. Now they printed the Truma Sakri. Now they printed in the back of the tzos. Years ago they used to print it separately. It's a thin sefer. It has a lot of very beautiful things. So this point is a machlekes between the kuntros hasvekas and the tzos, the two brothers and the machlekes. What is cheskas marakam all about? Is that a form of muchzok, or is that just a din of chazaka? Let's say if I have a piece of meat and I don't know whether it, I have a piece of meat sitting in the refrigerator. And I see I put a container of milk on the shelf above it, and the milk, I didn't realize the container was dripping. So the meat on the bottom is sitting and soaking in the milk. So if it soaks for 24 hours, then you say kovish kemulushol, and it becomes dreif, and you can't just wash it off and squeeze out all the milk. But if it's soaking for less than 24 hours, then you don't say kovish kemulushol. You just do the best job you can. You wash off all of the milk and you squeeze out as much as possible. Enjoy. And then everything is kosher. So what do you do if you're not sure? You're not sure. The milk container was there for more than 24 hours. But you don't know when it started to leak. It could be that it's leaking only for 20 hours. Could be it's not leaking for the full 25 hours that is on top. So whenever this is suffix, so the piece of meat when I put it in the refrigerator was kosher. I'm a supik if it changed, if the status quo changed or not. So then yishtalav chazoka de meikora. Yesterday when I put the piece of meat in the refrigerator, it was kosher. When I bought it in the store, it was kosher. I'm a supik whether it soaked for 24 hours. So if you're a supik, so you follow whatever the chazoka de meikora was. So let's say a girl is single, and there's a suffik whether one did kiddushin on the girl. So you say she's becheskas pruya, or faker, a woman is a nation sish. You're not sure if her husband died or not, so she's becheskas eishes ish. So you follow the status quo. So that's a big machlekes to Ksois and his brother. What's the status of cheskas marakam? Cheskas marakam is just being chazok and meikor, you follow status quo. And cheskas marakam is a form of muchzik, even though he's not holding on to it now, but still it's a lower form of muchzik. The strongest form of muchzik is cheskas tvisa dahashta, if it's b'shusa now. Muchzik means b'shusa. The strongest form of muchzik is when it's b'shusa now. And marakama is a lower form. That's how we usually assume. The cheskas marakama is not just a din of status quo, what we call chazok and the meikora. It's a din of form of muchzik. Just it's kedai to keep in mind. This is going to be a little bit... people are sometimes confused about that. The Prima Godim wrote a commentary on Shulchan Aruch. He wrote on Aruch Chaim, and we have on Yerideus printed. So in the beginning of the Prima Godim on Aruch Chaim, he has what he calls a psicha kolelos l'Aruch Chaim, a general introduction to Aruch Chaim. is not really an introduction. It's a general introduction to all of Torah Shabbat Pen. So it's a valuable piece. It's a very strong sefer. So he points out in one place, he points out that the word chazaka appears in the Gemara with six different meanings. You shouldn't confuse the different meanings. So sometimes chazaka means status quo, chazaka the meikora. Let's say the girl was single until today, and it's a question whether the kiddusha mochal or not. So strictly speaking, he said the girl is becheskes penuya, assume that she's not married, or the woman is married already for some of the years, she's becheskes eishes ish. You're not sure if the husband is still alive, so she's still becheskes eishes ish. You assume status quo didn't change. That's chazaka the meikora. Then sometimes you have chazaka, the Gemara has here, chazaka, ein odem parea toch zmanoi. It's a ruba d'leisa kamon. The word chazaka, where does that have? Here on pehei yomid aleph, on the bottom, and on hei yomid beis, the Gemara pa chazaka, ein odem parea toch zmanoi. What do you mean chazaka? It doesn't mean status quo. I mean, chazaka means a ruba d'leisa kamon. Then sometimes the word chazaka means who's muchzuk on the mom. Hamotz machaveh olef harai. Whoever is muchzuk, we call that also chazaka, but it has nothing to do with the other two words of chazaka. Then you have a discussion in the Gemara that a woman had a baby and they performed a bris milah, the baby died. Then she has another baby, or her sister has a baby boy and they performed a bris milah, second baby died. So the days of the Gemara, they had no way, they knew there's such a thing as hemophilia, that a baby doesn't, some people don't, the blood doesn't clot, but they had no way to tell whether the baby died because of hemophilia, in which case you shouldn't be mother, the next baby. If they have hemophilia running in the family, then if there's going to be another baby, the other baby may also have hemophilia. So you just don't do the bris milah. Or it just could be that the mikre the baby died. It has nothing necessarily to do with hemophilia. So how many times does a strange occurrence have to repeat himself till it raises a suffix in our mind? If there's a suffix, sakana, you don't do the bris milah. How many times does a strange thing have to happen that you say that it seems to indicate possibly that there's a pattern? Or let's say, how many times a woman has to be koveh vesis to see what is her regularity to have a riyazdam? So the Gemara says there's a shaila. Three times in a row, two times in a row, how many times does she have to have the same regilus repeat itself to be koveh vesis? Or in the days of the Gemara, there would be a practice that if a woman was married and the husband died, then she marries someone else, the husband dies, and you don't know the cause of death, so we treat the woman as a katlanis, and maybe being married to that woman causes the husband to get sick and die. If you know that he died, he was in an automobile accident, it has nothing to do with the wife. But if he died based on a mysterious cause, you don't know the cause of death, so maybe it's unhealthy to live with this woman. The Gemara has a topic of katlanis. So how many times does the husband have to die that you should raise such a suffix that maybe the woman is a katlanis? So that's a discussion. The Gemara, two times or three times. Betrezim ni ava chazaka, betlasim ni ava chazaka. What do you mean? What the word chazaka doesn't mean the same as the other two cases. Chazaka here just means how many times does a strange occurrence have to repeat itself that I should say that there's a latest asafik, that maybe there's what to worry about. Then there's another chazaka, karka is nicknames by chazaka. If I want to sell you karka, so you can make kinya chazaka, you can. Then the cheska sabatim, the whole third parak, that has nothing to do with any of the other chazakas. The word chazaka is used with six different meanings. You shouldn't be confused. Some people, some tamil chachamim, they think chazaka, it's the same, totally different, unrelated chazakas. Unrelated. So here Taisus is going to be talking about Nigum and Bakam Chazaka. There's a din in the Chumash that if I say, I lent you $1,000 and you never paid me back the money, I'm tevel you, I want you to pay me $1,000 that I lent you last year, you never paid back. And you say, Paraiti. Or you say, Loi Lovisi. I never borrowed the money in the first place. Not true. Or he says, Paraiti, I paid. So the din is that in a Torah you believe, you don't even have to swear anything. In the days of the Amoraim Achronim, by the time the Gemara was written, so they had already made a takana, the Amoraim made a takana, Shavuos Eses. The Gemara says Vehoidna. The Gemara in the beginning of the second parak Kedushin says Vehoidna. And today, at the time that we're putting together the Gemara, by the time of Rabbeinu Arvashi, the Gemara wasn't the Talmud Bavli wasn't written down until generations later. In the days of the Gaonim was when they wrote down the Gemara. There was a big dispute whether they should write down the Gemara. So finally, the mazel was that they wrote it down. They wouldn't have written it down. How would it be possible for anybody today to rattle off all the Gemara by heart? The whole Torah would have been forgotten. So the days of the Gaonim, there was a big machlokes, and the mazel was that they decided they are going to write down the Gemara. So when the Gemara says Behoidna, means in the days of Rabbeinu Rav Ashi, when they were completing all the discussions in the Gemara, so by the time Rabbeinu Rav Ashi were Mesada the Gemara, it wasn't printed yet, it wasn't written until way later, by the time they were Mesada it, so by then they had already introduced Shavuos Esses. But in the days of the Tanaim, they said there was no such thing as a Shavuos Esses. If a person is Koifer HaKol. So if a person is, let's say, he says Paraiti, Hololavisi, that's Koifer HaKol. What if the fellow says, it's true what you say, you lent me $1,000 and I didn't pay it back, but I'm not going to pay it back because machalta, you were moichel. Moichel $1,000? I was moichel, I'm not so sure who you are. I didn't get your name. I was moichel you $1,000. I'm not, I don't have that much money. I'm not a multimillionaire that I can just be moichel $1,000 to a person I'm not so close to. So it sounds fishy, machalta, or I say, it's true, you lent me $1,000, and I never paid it back, because it's chayapta li kenegdon. True, I owe you $1,000, but you crashed into my car, and I had to have them fix it in the auto mechanic, and it cost exactly $1,000 to fix it. So I owe you $1,000, you owe me $1,000, and it's a wash. Punkt, exactly $1,000. It sounds like a fishy, just like the taina, machalta sounds fishy. It's a strange, it's not, if he says loilavisi, he says paraiti, that's the most direct tainas ptur. See, that's the din of kofar hakol es neman. But he says machaltan es chayavta li kenegdon, that's not considered kofar hakol. But that's the din of migul. That's the din of migul. The Ksois points out we don't know what the pasuk is, but he says there must be a pasuk somewhere for migul, because it's not at all a logical thing. The din is any case where he could have said lo lavisi, he could have said paraiti, even though he doesn't say that, he says machalton es chayavta li kenegdon. So then the nitva is nemun with amigu. Since if he would have said lo lavisi, it would have been believed. So now that he says machalton es chayavta li kenegdon, that's also nemun b'toras migu. So that's what Tosis is going to be discussing over here. Sometimes there's a taina that's nemam the Torah's koifer hakol, if it's the most direct taina's p'tur, and sometimes it's not really nemam the Torah's koifer hakol because it's fishy. The Ran on the Rif in Shavuos points this out. When the Gemara talks a lot about nigul, so the Ran says what we would call a fishy taina doesn't smell right. The guy says machalta, he was machal $1,000. Depends, machalta a quarter. Machalta a dollar is one thing, machalta $1,000, and they're not that friendly. So it sounds fishy. So that's only nema b'toras migu. Well, let's say nischayavta li kenegdan. He says, true, I borrowed $1,000, I never paid it back, but it's a wash, because you crashed into my car, and bimikre, it happens to be exactly $1,000. So that's, whenever it's fishy, that's called rea tainosi. It doesn't smell right. So then the nitva is neman, but only b'toras migu. You don't have a migu, then not. So the Gemara has a discussion, what's the din of migu b'mokam chazoka? What does it mean, migu b'mokam chazoka? So here the Tosfos on Heyom and Beis, the bottom Tosfos has, Hikshu Rebbe Rav Mordechai, a big Tosfos on the bottom. Tosfos has a contradiction between three Gemaras. One Gemara says that Migu is good even if it's contradicted by Ruba Dalei Sekamon. One Gemara says that it's no good. One Gemara has an Ibaya Dalei Shita. A three-way theory. Yes, no, or maybe. Which is it? The Taisa stands on the head to give a teretz on the three-way kasha. And the Shach and Chosha Mishpat has all the Kaloli Migu. Simon Pei Beis, I think. Chosha Mishpat is all about Kaloli Migu. So the Shach at the end of the Simon reviews all the Kaloli Migu. He says, we follow the Nemuki Yosef. And this Tosfos Kasha, And Taisus doesn't really do justice to the kasha. So he says the answer is migu mamakam chazok. If the migu, the tainas on migu is contradicted by ruba d'leisa kamon, it depends how strong is the ruba d'leisa kamon. If it's 95% roiv, then that kills the whole migu. It's 51% roiv. That's what migu is all about. It doesn't seem true. The guy says machalto. What do you mean machalto? $1,000? We're not so friendly. The roiv is that it's not true. But that's what migu is all about. When it's a rea tainase, it's a shvacha taina, it's not the most direct tainas ptur, then you say migu. And if it's a migu that's contradicted by a ruba de leisa kamon, the word chazake, all three cases, is used in the sense of ruba de leisa kamon. If the migu is contradicted by a ruba de leisa kamon of 85%, not 95%, 80%, 85%, that that's an ibai, the leiv shita nigemara. How strong the roiv has to be. Let's say the guy says, you lent me $1,000 and I didn't pay it back and I'm not going to pay it back because the cow jumped over the moon, and a whole long story with detail. Each step of the story is so crazy, so far-fetched. If it would really be true, he's right, it would be potter. How often does it happen that the cow jumped over the moon? How often does it happen that there was a lunar eclipse? The whole thing was so far-fetched. So if it's very far-fetched, then for sure the migu is no good. Okay, we're going to have to discuss a lot on this Taisa Lefichah. We're going to have to discuss some more. Good. Tomorrow is another day. We got to go downstairs down the Mincha.